ask you when you were born?
I was born April 22nd, 1896, in Reggiana, Italy.
Uh-huh. And when did you come to this country?
1900, I was 4.5 years old.
No,
except I've been over there, and looked, the only thing I remember coming over is getting scared on a platform with a steam train coming to pick us up.
And you were first in New Jersey?
We lived in New York for a year and a half, maybe 2 years in New York, mm-hmm. And then we moved to New Jersey, to Newark, New Jersey. I think I was 7 years old when I got to Newark, New Jersey. So it must have been two and a half years in New York. We moved out of New York when McKinley was killed.
Uh-huh.
We moved over to New Jersey. My father got scared because an Italian guy killed McKinley, and they were afraid of the repercussions to the Italian people. So we moved over to Newark. To Jersey.
And when did you first come to Florida?
I came to Florida in 1914, to Miami.
So you were about 20 then?
18.
Mm-hmm. You went to Miami, and when did you come to Lake Okeechobee?
I came to Lake Okeechobee after World War I, 1919.
Uh-huh.
My wife was over here in 1918. When I lived in Miami in 1914, Miami was only about 12,000 to 15,000, and the Dade County was only about 18,000.
Did you have other relatives living here?
No, there's nobody there. I came down to work on the Vizcaya Museum in Miami.
Uh-huh.
At that time, it was James Deering Estate, which was converted into a museum after he died.
Uh-huh.
And during that period of time, I got married, and the war came on, and I went to World War I. And I served in the St. McKeel, Mewson, Oregon offensives. And came home, and in the meantime, my wife's family moved here at Pahokee, so I came to Pahokee in 1919.
Mm-hmm. And what was Pahokee like?
Well, Pahokee, them days, it was the civilization of Pahokee at that time was the aftermath of the Civil War. The people were out of Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, and Missouri. And most of them were fishermen, bootleggers. There was only a handful of farmers. But fishing was a big industry in Lake Okeechobee at the time. They were shipping anywhere from $5 to $12 million worth of fish at 2 cents a pound out of Lake Okeechobee at that time. And it was fishermen, trot line fishermen all around Lake Okeechobee. And and bootlegging was moonshining was a big deal them days.
Uh-huh. Hmm. What did you do
then? I started farming, and start doing odd jobs, and I finally got me a tractor and one thing and another, and I started clearing land and for other people and farming some too.
Is that vegetable farming?
Yeah, vegetable farming. Mostly beans,
uh-huh.
And eggplants, and eggplants and beans was at that time. Tomatoes. No, wait a minute. I'm ahead of my time. Oh, tomatoes at that time was a big deal in the Glades.
Mm-hmm.
You could drop a tomato on the ground, and it would grow and make tomatoes.
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah.
You didn't have to even worry about. Didn't have to worry about nothing. No fertilizer. No insects outside. Mm-hmm. Nature took care of it.
It's the rich muck soil.
Well, it was my boss man on the Deering Estate wanted me to go back, and he came out here twice to get me to go back, and I wouldn't go on account of the potentials of the Everglades at that time, because the Everglades was, at that time, was like God made it, and the opportunities and the potentials of developing the Glades was a challenge, and to me, I'd rather be here and challenge the progress of the Glades than go back to work to go on the Deering Estate,
mm-hmm.
And so I stayed here in Pahokee. I went through all the trials and tribulations of it, And we're still here. We've been living on this piece of property here for 73 years. Mm. Well, from 1919 till now. What is it, 72? 70?
How many years? What's
92? 1990 would be 20. 20 to 90 is 70, 71, 70. Yeah, 73 years.
Uh-huh.
I understand.
Did it take you a little while to be accepted? Were you considered an outsider?
You mean accepted? That's quite a story. When I got off the boat, this is boat days. You had to come out here by boat. There was no roads out here. It took me 10 hours from West Palm Beach to Pahokee by boat. When I jumped off the boat, them days, the community, 90% of the community would meet the boat. Mm-hmm. And my wife was there with my first, was their grandfather as a baby. My wife saw me and I saw her, and I jumped off the boat before the boat landed on the dock, and went and got together, and people pat me on the back and they offered me the whole town. I was the first soldier that came out of World War I to Pahokee, and I received like $1 million. But in 90 days, I had to whip a deputy sheriff for insults. Oh. Well, I got to tell the story as it is. My wife don't want me to do that.
Is that because you're an Italian?
Well, because I was a Catholic and Italian. This is presumptuous on their part.
Uh-huh.
I was a Yankee and I was Catholic and so forth and so on. Because just like I said, the people were the aftermath of the Civil War. I'm not going to say they were ignorant. They were honest people,
mm-hmm.
but they were very prejudiced.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very prejudiced.
They're quite isolated from everything
huh?
else around. They're isolated.
Well, not only that, but everybody had a story. I had a history behind them, but they didn't want to tell. You know what I mean? It's the society that I'm talking about. You can't comprehend it no matter how I illustrate it. Very few of them could read and write. Most of them, I wouldn't say they're ignorant. They were ignorant. They were intelligent to the environmental life that they led. Don't misunderstand me. They were good farmers. They were good fishermen. They were whatever they were making a living at. They were good at it. But they were very prejudiced. There was no churches here at the time, and we built a union church with no denominations, and that stayed until 25 when the roads came in, and, of course, the denominations came in. Of course, that killed that. But during that period of time, all these folks here that was like what we're talking about would come to church. We used to fill the church every Sunday and used to have half of the people at services on Wednesday night. But after denominations took over, then of course the community changed all the way around because the roads were built in 25 and the impact came into the area and we became a cosmopolitan community. But prior to that, very clannish, very self-determinated people. And in my way of thinking, I forgave them for the simple reason I consider their handicaps.
Well, you said you had to whip the sheriff.
I had to whip a deputy sheriff, yeah, to stop this, to stop it.
Did it get better after that?
For a while, then it got where the younger generation took over,
uh-huh.
and I had to whip another one there to stop it at that place, but. In all, there's good people there that I associated with that was very friendly to me and done me a lot of good.
Mm-hmm.
But I still had the harassment of going to the shop or going to a store or going to the post office or going but you know that's life. I had the same thing when I was growing up and going to school.
Mm-hmm.
We had to go through a German, Irish, Jewish settlement to get to school. Well, sometimes we had to fight the Jews, sometimes we had to fight the Germans, sometimes we had to fight the Irish to get there. The school, we had 24 basins in our school where people wash up at before they went to class. So you can see what kind of environments we were in. So I was used to it as far as the insults or harassment, whatever you want
to
call it.
Take care of yourself too.
But I learned that on the streets. Uh-huh. And them days we used to use our fists. We didn't use knives and chains and knives and guns and all that stuff. Them days we used our fists. And I had a good hand, good right hand. Uh-huh. And it generally connected with the jaw. Uh-huh. And when that did happen, the last one I had to get to, he was about 19 years old, 18, 19 years old, and the father came to me. And I was looking for trouble with his father, and the father apologized to me for the boy doing what he did. But he also wished that I wouldn't have hit him, because I hurt him pretty bad. But he still shook my hands and told me it was all right. So we had good people. We had a lot of good people here, but we had this other element too. And you'll have that in all society. It doesn't make no difference where you go. Mm-hmm. You can go to Washington, D.C., or you go to Miami, or you go anywhere else. But harassment, now you think about the colored people. We got to stop talking about colored people and white people, Italian people, German people. We got to say we are Americans and be treated alike under the law, mm-hmm. and not expect special privileges. But every time something comes up with the colored people, they want special privileges. And as long as they consider themselves black, and as long as they consider themselves that every issue is a black issue, we're going to have trouble with the blacks.
Now, when you first came to Lake Okeechobee, were there many black folks around?
Well, the black folks them days were different than they are now.
But they didn't
buck up against a white man. Mm-hmm. They obeyed. And they were very devoted to their jobs. They're very devoted to their, a lot of them were very devoted to their families. And they appreciated anything you done for them. And the colored man that was good, a good colored man, had no problem with the white people. The only problem we had is with the colored people that were brilliant. And the consequences were why they got in trouble with us. But I never had no trouble with the colored people because I've only had two confrontations in a period of 35 years. I used to handle 18 on an average from 9 to 18 men a day on the farm, plus 300, 400, 500 during picking season. Mm-hmm. I never had no trouble with the colored people because I treated them right and they knew it. I didn't try to gouge them. I didn't try to... I always gave them a value received for what the work they did. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times, in most cases, I paid a little above the average salaries and average picking. Mm-hmm. And I had quarters for them and all, never did charge them any rent. And I never had no problem with them.
So where did they come from? During the season,
they came from Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, uh-huh. so forth and so on. There's a few people came out of Jamaica once in a while.
Even back then.
They came on their own free will, uh-huh. Uh-huh. Now they come under a contract with the government,
right.
mm-hmm. which is a different story. Mm-hmm. I during that period of time we had problems with our schools. And the consequences are that I got confronted with the powers to be and got into politics and school affairs. And I was elected on the school board and served 16 years all during the Depression years and kept the schools open. Mm-hmm. And we had all kinds of problems, mostly money problems. But the people of wealth, when we put the proposition up to them, they came across individually, collectively, and the business people supported us. And we carried around $60,000 to $80,000 of bills under the table without no record. Mm-hmm. And we also borrowed from three people $50,000 during that period of time, which was $150,000, without no law justifying us to borrow the money or them giving us the money. We had to turn around with a promise that we'd get legislation to pass it, although we got in touch with the governor and the legislature that we were doing it, mm-hmm. and they agreed that they would pass legislation to justify the loans. But we also started the junior college the same way. The teachers that handled the junior college done their work for nothing, except one teacher we paid $26 a month, and that was done by donations. It didn't come out of the taxpayers' money. And then another thing happened that I happened to be in a party in Lake Worth that one of the diplomats of the United States Diplomatic Corps was there. I got talking to him, and we got talking about the Glades, and at that time, the Glades was in a boom. Pahokee had a population of about 16,000 at that time. We were the third largest town there was in Palm Beach County. And Bell Glade was booming, and South Bay was booming. Canal Point was booming. We had about 39,000 people between Belgrade and Martin County at that time in this area, and our schools were in the Glades. We were hanging them on clotheslines. We had no place to put them. Didn't have no money to build buildings and so forth and so on. So this diplomat, when I got through talking to him, he says, "Why don't you write to Mrs. Roosevelt and tell her about it? It's right up her alley. That's just the kind of work she likes to do." Oh, I said, "She's going to pay no attention to money." "Yes, she will. She will, too." So I didn't come home that night. I went to the office that day in West Palm Beach and dictated a letter to Mrs. Roosevelt. And within a week, I get a letter from her to meet her at South Bay at 7 o'clock in the morning. So I'm there at 7 o'clock, and here she drives up in the Lincoln touring car with three naval officers. And they drive up to where I was standing, and she tells me to jump in. And we went over the Glades from Lake Harbor to Sandcut. And she had all the records. She already had all the records. You know, everybody we're going to see, their name and all the junk joints, all the labor camps and all that kind of stuff. And she also knew about the junior college, and she also knew about the $350,000 that we borrowed. Mm. And I told her what happened and how we corrected it and so forth, how we intended to correct it at that particular time. And so she was satisfied with the answers that I gave her. So within 30 days, from that day, from 30 days later, the lumber was on the ground, the land was bought, the contracts were given to build a school at Sandcut, a school at Pahokee, a school at Belgrade, and to take care of the overload. And the schools were put in the camps, where the camps were. I mean, well, she built a camp and schools, and a recreation hall for the camp, and instituted sanitation, water, and everything. And within 30 days, everything's on the ground and everybody going to work. And when it's all completed, we got the kids in the classroom. We hired more teachers, and everything's okay. Then another thing, I was the State Board of the State School Board Association elected me on the legislative committee, and the committee made me chairman. And during the six terms, seven terms that I stayed on there, we instituted what they call the foundation program, which put the state in obligation on a daily basis of obligation to maintain education in the state of Florida, which at that time, you went to Tallahassee and fought whatever little money was there, and you competed with all agencies, including the Board of County Commissioner and so forth and so on. And if the legislature gave it to you, it was all right. If the legislature didn't do it, you didn't get it. And the consequences were the schools were being, the only thing we had at that time was ad valorem taxes to maintain our schools. And it was a yo-yo deal. It was a, one year you'd have enough money, and the next year you didn't have enough money. And you either had to close up or not close up. But the people of Palm Beach County were so, when we presented our case before the merchants and the clubs, by arrangements was made, and the state and the tax collector or tax assessor, we overcame it, and that's the way we went through during the Depression. And then we also passed the teacher's pension plan, which I had a whole lot to do with it. And in 1937, we passed every bill for the superintendents and school teachers and the board members. Passed every bill. First time in the history of the state. So I'd done my share in the, and I also served on the city council. And I also served, I created the drainage district, the East Beach Drainage District. I carried a petition 7 years for the landowners to sign up for a district. And finally, one October, we had about 13 inches of rain in 1 week. And the land was all under cultivation. And they all come and signed the petition. So that following April, we organized the East Beach Drainage District. And now we have a district that can handle the water. And I served, process, and I served 27 years on it.
Who were some of the people that were here in the early days? Do you remember anybody that was sort of like an eccentric character or somebody that...
Oh, we had all kinds of characters.
Yeah.
You name them, we had them. Had all kinds of characters. We had the funny guys, we had the Ashley gang, they stayed over here occasionally and spent a week, 10 days over here in Pahokee.
Who were they, the Ashley gang?
The Ashley gang was the gang that, they were outlaws. They killed, robbed banks, mm-hmm. hijacked liquor boats from Bimini. They killed one of the Ashley brothers killed an Indian for his hides, skins, alligator skins and hides. And we had the drunks and we had the bootleg. Of course, we had bootleg and plenty of whiskey and all around. Mm-hmm. And with all its trials and tribulations, we all had that. And then we had a lot of people there that were zealous, envious, crooked, mm-hmm. ambitions. We had the same character you have anywhere else. And we had the religious people, and we had the educational people, and we had the other people. Mm-hmm. Without mentioning any names, because now you, when you mention a name, you don't know how many kin folks you got around here.
Yeah.
There might be one in the room. Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't have to mention any names, but you don't need to mention any names.
No.
So you might be able to tell me something about some
well,
things.
The only thing I can tell you about the other people in regards to what they did and didn't do is we had one man named Paget here that was mayor of this town for about 25 years, or 20 years, at least 20 years. He was a character. He had one of them dean philosophy of justice. Uh-huh. Anybody, but he always got elected. Uh-huh. And only he was, difference between him and Dean would be that he favored the children. He gave the kids up all, any kid come up to him, he always gives them a break.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, he didn't.
Kind of a hanging judge, huh?
Well, in a way. Then if you had a, while I was on the, council, I was like, I was on a chairman there, and when he was unavailable, well, the court came under my jurisdiction, and I kind of followed his philosophy, where it was detrimental to society, why
strict,
and mm-hmm. and when a child was involved, why I was more lenient, gave the child a break.
Mm-hmm.
Except one case, made him put him on the garbage wagon because he was about 17 years old. I consider a kid 17 years old knows better. You know what I mean? I know when I was 15 years old and 17 years old, I was responsible for what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I accorded me. But life in the Glades, when I first came here, there's no reproduction of it. There's no way in the world for you to bring that society back.
The only thing I can think of is it must have been something like the Wild West.
Well, in one sense, as far as the there wasn't the killing and stuff like mm-hmm. the Far West,
mm-hmm.
But the pioneers, we must have had about at least a dozen hermits around here.
Hermits.
Well, yeah.
Lived off by themselves.
Well, they lived out there next to the sawgrass.
Uh-huh.
See, 90% of the Everglades at that time was sawgrass land, and the Agriculture Department through a freak discovery analyzed what it takes to put that land in production. Originally, if you went to plant anything there, it wouldn't grow. I mean, it would grow, but it wouldn't produce.
Mm-hmm.
But found out a man on the Miami River, on the Miami Canal, on the edge of the... see, them days, we were known as squatters. The land, 90% of the land, well, more than that, 98% of the land belonged to the state. And you could squat on it.
Mm-hmm.
And farm it and so forth and so on without paying taxes or anything else. And one of them hermits on the Miami Canal started growing some eggplants. Well, them days all we had for insecticides was the picture what they call Bordeaux, which is lime, bluestone, and arsenic. That's the only thing we had them days. And then we had a bee brand powder that would kill. He was made out of some kind of a flower seed. I forgot the name of the darn thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all we had them days. But anyhow, he had his mixture next to the canal where he got the water to make his mixture and all. And the eggplants were where the mixture was being made and all, and where the plants were more acceptable to the to his spray cans and all,
mm-hmm.
they were doing fine. But the further down you got away from it, they wasn't doing so good. See,
mm-hmm.
So one of the guys at the experiment station went there and looked it over and all, and he figured that that Bordeaux mixture was doing the job. See,
mm-hmm.
on that sawgrass land. So he went to the experiment station there, and he experimented with the Bordeaux mixture and all, and he came to the conclusion that by plowing the sawgrass land under and flooding it, and then so to rot the sawgrass,
mm-hmm.
and then put 100 pounds of bluestone per acre and let it set there, and then replow it and plant it, it would grow potatoes. And that's how, that's one of the crops that they found out would be profitable.
What was in that bluestone? Do you have any idea?
The bluestone broke down the soil, so the bacteria would work, uh-huh. Where it made the soil available to the roots, which made whatever chemical change there is in the soil that does that. That's what happened.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we need to change the size of the tape. Yeah.